is here. Time for Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast, with your host, Reuben Truthmaker.
You can't handle the truth!
And the other dude.
Man, I've got certain information.
The phones are lighting up, and you guys are live.
And welcome, Coastsiders. It's time for some coastal windage. It's Friday, March 9, 2018. Lock your doors and keep your hands and feet inside the car. This is Coastal Windage. I'm your co-host, Reuben Truthmaker, and with me, as always, is the other dude. Morning, other dude.
Good morning.
How are you doing on this foggy morning? Feeling foggy?
A little bit, yeah. Of course, I'm going to mention it because it's there. Yeah. The traffic seemed a little snarled.
Yeah, do you think that's from the fog or just Friday traffic?
I think it's all of it.
Yeah, I'm feeling a little clouded this morning. I've got a new coffee mug that my sister gave me. She works for a police department in Minnesota, so she gave me a mug with their insignia on it, which looks kind of cool.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's nice, stainless steel. Unfortunately, the inside is lined with plastic, and really, I can hardly taste coffee. All I can taste is the sweet, creamy flavor of BPA. So it's kind of sludging my system right now, but I'll try to get through it. Oh, this is Coastal Windage, by the way, the talk of the coast, the Coastside's only live call-in talk radio show, airing every Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. on KHNB Community Radio, 100.9 FM and 1710 AM. So every week we talk about Coastside issues and other hot topics. Check out podcasts of our show and stream the show live from khmbradio.com. This is the Coastside's community voice, so let's hear from you, Coastsiders. This is a live call-in talk show. Give us a call, that number, 560-9851. You can send us an email at coastalwindage@gmail.com, or give us a call, as I said, 560-9851. All right, let's get into our topics this morning.
What do we got?
Yeah, we got some good ones. Okay, well, car break-ins. All right.
Been there.
Yeah, right?
Not performing them, but had it done to me. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Is this petty theft or yet another burgeoning sector of the global economy? It seems like a ridiculous question. In fact, unfortunately, I think it may be the latter. So we'll get into that, unfortunately.
Okay.
And the Granada Community Services District, which is a special LAFCO county district in the Mid-Coast, it handles solid waste and parks and rec. It is moving forward with a plan for active recreation. A new agreement between the GCSD and San Mateo County may have finally cleared the way for some new recreational opportunities in the Mid-Coast.
Well, that's good news.
It is good news,
yeah.
for all people, for us adults and for our children. So yep. That's hopefully good news.
I know you've been working on a project trying to get it started for quite a while.
Well, one of the things I'm very excited and interested and passionate about, as are many people specifically in the Mid-Coast, is a bicycle pump track, and that's possibly in part of these plans that GCSD has. So that's one of the reasons I'm pretty excited about it.
So I guess sometimes politicking does pay off.
I mean, is there a pump track yet?
But it's moving closer, maybe.
Well,
all right, we'll talk
we'll
about
get
it.
Into that. Okay. Yeah, uh-huh. Trying to be positive, but when you said politics, I kind of went, wah, wah. And then why protest marches and rallies? I mean, they've had their time and place in history. They have been effective and affected change.
Right.
But are they now just kind of a ritualized vestige of past activism? You know, I saw a clip of some students. I think they were high school students, and, you know, bless them for their efforts and their activism. But they had occupied an office or something, and they were doing the old, hey, ho, you know, guns have got to go or something like that. I mean, if we're going to do the – we need some new songs, I guess is what I'm saying, some new activism songs. You know, the old hey, ho thing, that it seems a little tired. All right. Well, let's get it right into some news and notes.
Okay.
So the county has repealed and replaced, not Obamacare, instead their own – cannabis ordinance. So,
what?
Yeah,
we didn't even get started with the old one, and now we got to get a new one.
That's what I'm saying. Just a couple months after passing an ordinance allowing commercial cultivation of cannabis in existing greenhouse spaces, December 12th, to be exact, was the date that this ordinance was passed. The county has repealed that ordinance, which they have done in favor of one that uses case-by-case discretionary licensing rather than the ministerial licensing approved in the original ordinance. That's one of the small differences.
So let me
try to parse that.
So ministerial, yeah. That means that you got some boxes you got to check off.
Yes.
It has to meet this and this and that, and you as the applicant have to meet certain boxes and check them off and whatever.
Yep.
And they want to change it to where they just make a decision based on case by case and that sort of thing.
Exactly. They want to look at the details of each specific case and determine whether that they're going to approve that or not. Which, you know, so...
It sounds to me a little fishy.
Well, San Mateo County Development Director Steve Monowitz says it will help ensure compliance with environmental mitigations, which is good. It's because they'll be looking at each case by case and deciding, okay, this maybe has more environmental concerns than another one. So that's good. But he also noted that many of the agricultural lands available for cultivation don't actually comply with the current regulations and would need to build new greenhouses, which would require discretionary permits anyway. Seems like maybe that should have been thought out ahead of time. I mean, this is a pretty quick update. So
yeah.
What I would be asking, I guess, is are critics who were claiming that the county was rushing into the ordinance and should have done more due diligence before they passed this in December, there were many people who wanted another year of study and research and benchmarking. Are those critics right? Have they been proven right now that less than 3 months – after passing this ordinance, they've already had to repeal and replace it with a new one.
But they had months, literally years, before they made the first decision to get things the way they wanted it, but they didn't do it then. Why does anybody think that taking another year will get them any closer to having a sound proposal?
Yeah, well, they had a year because in 2016, November 2016, the statewide proposition was passed legalizing, and then all the municipalities and jurisdictions had a year till January 1st, 2018 to figure out what they were going to do in their own municipalities, how that legalization was going to look in their own districts. And there was a 1 year moratorium during 2017. A lot of these municipalities just extended that moratorium another year for further consideration. And that's what a lot of critics were advocating for San Mateo County.
But at the same time, we're not doing this in the dark.
Yeah.
There are other states who have already gone through these machinations and have gotten it to work in some form or fashion. You can't tell me that we couldn't look over to some other state and go, oh, their program seems to be working pretty well. Let's just kind of copy that.
Or even other counties.
Or other counties.
Sonoma County uses this ministerial process. A discretionary process. So, but on the other hand, you know, there's a lot of moving parts, a lot to think about.
Sure.
A lot of times you don't. You know, you kind of need to put it into place in software. They do beta, you know, where they put a version of the software into play for people to use. And while they're using it, they discover all the things that don't work. So, I mean, that could be what's happening here. But, you know, you 2 months into something, you hate to see an ordinance already repealed and replaced.
Right.
That doesn't – the optics on that are not good, as they say. Now – over in the city of Half Moon Bay, last week they finally released their draft cannabis ordinance. And the ordinance allows for limited storage of immature plants grown on-site in existing greenhouse spaces. The city is currently soliciting feedback through its website, and, quote, other opportunities for feedback will be announced in coming weeks. So look for that, city of Half Moon Bay residents and voters. Moving up the coast a little bit, Airport Road in Moss Beach there. By the airport,
right.
Half Moon Bay Airport, the Half Moon Bay Airport in Moss Beach. This is my. You remember that movie, The Elephant Man?
I do.
Okay, so this is my. The Airport Road is not a parking lot. It is a scenic thoroughfare. I am just a road. No, it's not a parking lot. Although, if you were to drive, I know that was really a horrible.
We're just going to move on.
If I hadn't said what it was, people would be thinking, is he having a stroke right now? They might be thinking that.
You need to keep working with your voice coach.
I know. Okay. So Airport Road.
Yep.
There's a couple problems going on there. One is there's a lot of motorhomes that are being parked along there that are more than likely homeless people or people that are living out of their motorhomes that are, it's a place for them to park and sleep for the night. But a more pressing issue is the parking of cars, secondary cars, cars that are broken down. Who knows where these cars are coming from? But there's a lot more cars on airport along Airport Road than there used to be.
Right.
Now, the Midcoast Community Council, which is an elected advisory council to the San Mateo County Board of Supervisors, representing the unincorporated Midcoast communities of Miramar, El Granada, Princeton, Moss Beach, and Montera, has asked the county to designate sections of this road no parking. And the reasons they listed were for pedestrian and cyclist safety. Airport Road is actually a Class 3 bike path that connects the coastal trail from the Princeton area up to the Seal Cove area in Moss Beach. It doesn't look like it, but it is considered a Class 3 section of this trail, and a Class 3 bike trail being literally the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing specific, no other designations, just the shoulder.
And the vehicles are now taking up the shoulder.
They're taking up the shoulder, and Airport Road also has a wide gravel shoulder in addition to the asphalt shoulder of the road, and that gravel shoulder is what pedestrians and cyclists often use because cars go pretty fast on Airport Road, and
yeah.
when cars are parked on the asphalt shoulder, there's nowhere else to go except over to the gravel shoulder. But now cars are parking like half on the asphalt, half on the gravel, and there's over 100 cars there now. And so it's forcing pedestrians out into the road. And then when you have the motorhomes, they can't get on, they really can't get by there in any way without going out into the road. So the MCC is looking for certain sections of the road to be designated no parking. Now, the MCC is also adamant that this is not specifically about removing the people living in the motorhomes along Airport Road, though they do acknowledge that this might be a downstream result. So for information on this
topic... Again, sounds fishy.
I think
they're two birds with one stone is what they're getting out of this, whether they mean to or not.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a downstream result for sure. Well, we'll see. I have heard... people tell me that they have seen the sheriff come by and be putting the orange stickers, I think, that says, you know, you can't park here. And there has been some ticketing along Airport Road. So it has gotten the attention of the sheriff.
Okay.
For more information on this and how the MCC deliberated on the letter of support they sent to the Board of Supervisors, check out the MCC website at midcoastcommunitycouncil.org. Now, let me just add a plug here. The MCC website, in my opinion, is the best resource for Midcoast information available. It's better than the county website, better than the Half Moon Bay Review's website. And that's not to be critical of them. It's to say how comprehensive the MCC website is. Primary documents, maps, videos of past meetings, anything and everything you want to know about what is going on the micro civic level on the Midcoast. If you want it, go to the MCC website.
I'm sorry. I think I fell asleep there when you were doing that spiel about...
Well, go to the MCC website. Well, you'll be riveted.
Just government stuff because I'm kind of...
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, our culture correspondent, Livy Streetwise, is not here right now. She's actually attending a cultural performance.
She is.
Okay. But speaking of that, so I guess we will stand in her place. We will do our best. I mean, how can you really stand in
We
for
can't
Livy,
even begin to match up no. with Livy Streetwise.
But the Half Moon Bay High School annual musical this year is The Little Mermaid.
Very nice.
It's based on the Disney movie.
Uh-huh.
But director Jim Ward and student director Maddie Arnold have decided to focus this production on the Broadway musical version rather than the film version. And they said that it has some different elements that are more, there's more depth in the Broadway musical version than the cartoon film version.
Great.
Notice I used the word film this week?
You did.
So you're wearing off on me.
And you threw depth in there, too, and it's about a mermaid who lives under the sea.
Oh,
depth.
Wow. Yeah, I meant to do that. That was intentional. Yeah. Well, I was, you know, so they're doing the Broadway version, but I was kind of hoping for the Tom Hanks film version. You know,
Splash.
Splash, yeah. Yeah, but maybe someday.
I think Daryl Hannah's busy doing something.
Well, maybe next year they can look at Turner and Hooch. That would be a fun musical. The Turner and Hooch musical. I'll play Hooch. I'll drink some Hooch. How about that?
Okay.
Okay. So show dates for The Little Mermaid are March 16th, 17th, and 18th, and March 23, 24, and 25. Check out the Half Moon Bay High School website at hmbhs.schoolloop.com for showtimes and tickets. All right. Well, we're not even through our updates, and we're to the first commercial break. That's how packed the show is today. So, Coastsiders, again, we're going to be talking about car break-ins, the GCSD moving forward with active recreation, and why protest marches and rallies. Get on the phone right now. Give us a call at 560-9851. You're going to want to get in on this conversation, and we want to hear from you, Coastsiders. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
This is Ed Daniels of the law firm Corey Luzage DiGataldi Nastari and Riddle. Our partners have a combined 100 years of experience concentrating on estate planning and administration, transactional matters, and litigation services. As a small-town firm with a national reputation, we actively support several community service organizations, including Senior Coastsiders, Rotary Club of Half Moon Bay, and InVision Shelter Network, to name a few. To learn more about our firm, visit us on the web at CoreyLaw.com. That's CoreyLaw.com. Or call us for a free consultation at 726-7578 for estate planning, trust, probate, and transactional matters, or 871-5666 for litigation matters. Thank you.
Next time you need rocks, soil, bricks, concrete, call Rice Trucking and Soil Farm at 726-0100. They carry all types of soil mixes, custom blends, nursery mixes, and organic compost. They have been serving the Greater Bay Area for over 40 years. They're located at 2119 Cabrillo Highway South in Half Moon Bay. Call today and have Rice Trucking and Soil Farm deliver it to you, including building landscape and masonry supplies, along with rebar, interlocking pavers, flagstone, and more. Call them today at 726-0100. And it's on its way with Rice Trucking and Soil Farm in Half Moon Bay.
All right, and we are back, Coastsiders. We're still working on our update section of the show, so let's just finish that off before we get into car break-ins. So the last thing we wanted to mention is the Half Moon Bay High School boys basketball team has moved on in the Division III state championship tournament. On Wednesday, in the new Half Moon Bay Event Center, the 5th-seeded Cougars defeated the 12-seed Rio Americano Raiders 55-50 in the first round of the tournament. Cougars showed depth and character in grinding out a gritty win over the tough squad from Sacramento. Now they advance the quarterfinals in Modesto on Saturday at 6 p.m. against home team and number 4-seed Central Catholic High School. Go check them out if you can. The Cougar energy on Wednesday tilted the scales in favor of the hometown Cougars. I was there at the game on Wednesday. They played great, but in the second half, Rio Americano came back and took the lead. And at that point, the fans in the stands, because this was in Half Moon Bay, did that, you know, where they pound with their feet on the risers.
Right.
And defense. And you could just see, it felt like you were at a pro game or something. I mean, there was enough people there. There were some empty seats, but it was mostly full. And at the right point in the game, the fans were there. And the team totally responded and went on a run and got that 55-50 win.
Cool.
So 6 o'clock Saturday in Modesto, to consider going.
That's okay. A bit of a drive.
It is, but this is...
It's important.
Just like the football team, this is the road to the state championship. You never know.
The high school is on a tear with their athletics.
I know, and you know what? We had one of the dudes responsible, Ferdinand, in here and shooting the breeze, our live interview section last month. Okay, let's get into our car break-ins.
Okay.
So if you have a glance at the Half Moon Bay Review police log or look at Nextdoor, it won't take you long to find some article or post about a car break-in. Whether it's somebody pulling a smash and grab at the Montero State Beach parking lot or ruffling through the glove box in an unlocked car on a dark street in El Granada, car break-ins seem to be happening everywhere on the coast side here. Now, some of the latest Nextdoor posts indicate that the thieves are no longer just hitting the roadside pullouts and the parking lots, that they're now targeting the patrons of businesses like Via Uno and Sam's restaurant while they dine.
Wow.
Yeah, reports on Nextdoor include posts about suspicious people watching and casing diners as they leave their cars for the restaurants.
That is bizarre.
Yeah.
It's organized.
Now, these kind of break-ins are commonly referred to as smash and grabs, because what will happen is it's usually a two-person team.
Uh-huh.
One person's driving the getaway car.
Right.
One person hops out with a hammer or a rock or something, smashes a window of a car, reaches in, grabs whatever's there, and they're gone in 30 seconds. You know, so it that's why it's so common, is because it's so effective. We did some research. We had our crack research staff on it, but I will admit we don't have reliable statistics available to us right now for the coast side. So what we're talking about is anecdotal. You know,
and we can extrapolate that if it's happened in other places, this has moved here now, right?
Yes. I mean, well, that's a question. Is it radiating out from here, or is it coming here, or is it just everywhere at once?
I think it's everywhere.
Yeah. Well, it kind of seems like it's everywhere at once. I do have some statistics from around the Bay Area, none for San Mateo County specifically, unfortunately. So in Fremont, car break-ins spiked 35% last year. Okay, that's in San Jose. There were over 6,000 vehicle break-ins, an increase of 17%. In Oakland, up 32%. In San Francisco, there were 31,120 car break-ins, up 24% from last year, up 300% from 2011. Okay, so why? What's going on? The economy, if we were in a recession or worse, you would think, okay, you know, people are just desperate. They're needing stuff. They need to sell stuff. But it doesn't really feel like that. I mean, sure, there's economic pressure, but it doesn't have that feeling of, say, I lived in San Francisco in 91 in the kind of the Bush recession.
Uh-huh.
And those were some tough times.
Right.
So I could see it then. Also, we're not in necessarily a wave of drug addiction problems. You know, we're not in the throes of crack or the throes of meth that maybe it was 10 years ago. I know there's the opioid problem that's going on right now, but...
And it's bad.
It's bad, but maybe I'm just disconnected. So it doesn't seem like it's a wave of drug problems. One reason for the increase in car break-ins is that items left in cars have gotten more expensive. They're now high-end electronics. So, you know, almost... We were discussing earlier today, other dude, that almost every car now probably has a tablet, a laptop, and or a phone in it.
They probably do. And so part of the issue is, yes, this stuff's more expensive, so it makes it more attractive as a target, but it also goes back to the same old thing. People are lazy. Put that stuff away. Lock it in your trunk. Don't just leave it laying on the passenger seat.
Yeah.
Now, if your car is fairly cleaned out in the cab of it, and it looks like once they glance in there and they don't see stuff laying around, they're probably going to pass on by.
Yeah, totally.
And I have a theory on why this stuff is more pronounced now.
Okay.
Just like if you look at almost anything in this country right now, from politics right on down, it seems like it's the Wild West out there. People think they can just let their freak flag fly and do whatever they want to nowadays.
And so you're in terms of car break-ins, like, hey, there's no consequence.
There's no they're probably not going to catch me because, like you just said, two guys or females, not wanting to be sexist, but two people get a car, they drive around, they see some fairly nice-looking vehicles, one of them gets out, pops a few windows out of a vehicle, rummages through it, they're gone in 30 seconds. There's almost no chance of being caught, and if you do get caught, what are you going to get?
Well, it's interesting. Palo Alto Police Sergeant Wayne Benitez has cited two laws that he feels are encouraging this kind of activity.
Encouraging it,
yep.
See?
He says it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. And he cites Propositions 47 and 57. Now, Proposition 57 mandates that police are not allowed to chase a car for a property crime. So if you were a law enforcement officer and you witnessed a smash and grab, apparently by Proposition 57, you are not allowed to chase that vehicle if it takes off.
That makes sense. Is a phone or a computer or a tablet worth the cost of chasing people in a car with another car, and one or the two of you makes a slip and crash into somebody or run over somebody? That computer is not worth that kind of tragedy and liability.
Agreed. And as you said, if you would just put it in the darn trunk We wouldn't be having to chase, you know, a high-speed chase through the Palo Alto.
Right.
And then he also cited Proposition 47, which mandates reduced sentences to almost nil for nonviolent type of property crimes like this, where, you know, kind of petty theft. So those two, you know, legal statutes have reduced incentive for police departments to really focus on this.
And it's increased the incentive for people to do this.
Yeah, there's really no repercussions.
Right.
Now,
so prevention is probably the best answer.
It is.
Put stuff away, take it with you, that kind of thing.
But here's the thing. Here's the new twist on this that I feel is really spiking these numbers, so that the law is helping, right? But here's what I feel is really staking these numbers. These thieves, they're not just stealing hubcaps and stereos to sell at the local pawn shop anymore.
Right.
This is now high-stakes international crime. This headline from SF Gate last month caught my eye. Quote, Bay Area car break-ins allegedly tied to international crime ring. Oh? Well, let's see. So the article states that 8 people were recently charged in a multi-million-dollar fencing operation in which electronic devices like tablets, laptops, and phones were stolen from cars and shipped overseas to be sold on the black market in Vietnam. More than $2 million in stolen goods were seized from a storage container in San Jose. Police that were staking that place out also pulled over a semi-truck departing from the San Jose location and discovered another $1 million in stolen laptops. They believe the truck was on its way to the port of Oakland to be loaded on a cargo ship headed to Asia. So, you know, it's all global now, right? Your phone that gets, you know, your passenger window gets broken, your phone gets taken off your passenger seat over here at Gray Whale Cove, and it's part of the global economy now because it's making its way over to China or Asia in the black market. That's pretty wild to think about how interconnected everything is, down to petty theft is now at the international level.
But it's on a massive level, too.
It's on a massive level. Cause,
right.
So they were having a cargo container they were going to ship out of the port of Oakland on a ship, but suspects connected with the ring were also arrested at SFO trying to check 18 pieces of luggage. I mean, there's a red flag right there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, if you're trying to check 18 pieces of luggage, I'm all for arresting you just for that reason. I mean, come on.
That seems a little extreme.
No, it is extreme. 18 pieces of luggage?
Well, it's going to need some searching done to it and maybe some body cavity searches and scans or whatever, but
okay.
I don't think you can arrest somebody just because they got a lot of luggage.
Okay, so maybe arrest is a little extreme. But if you show up with 18 pieces of luggage and I'm TSA...
I'm thinking you're one of my ex-wives who used to take a lot of luggage.
I'm putting you through the ringer just for bringing 18 pieces of luggage. Stop with that. Who are you, Diana Ross? Yes, that was a Seinfeld reference. Okay. And all of those 18 pieces of luggage were stuffed with stolen electronic devices. So, once again, 18 pieces of luggage, like, you don't think that's going to be a flag, and then they're stuffed with stolen electronics? Gosh, I don't know. I thought I could get through.
So arrests should be made, and we're lucky that thieves are still, for the most part, idiots.
I guess, but...
Or maybe not the thieves themselves, but the mules?
The mules, the transporters?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they're the people that steal it have to have some guts, I guess, and some smarts, and the people that fence it, you know, need to have some connections. But I guess they you know, the underachievers, they choose to be the mules. You know, I guess they're the expendable ones.
There you go.
Well, Fremont Police Lieutenant Mike Tegner commented that the sophistication of the operation and others like it helps to explain the surge in car break-ins throughout the Bay Area. So as we think about increased car break-ins on the coast side, we need to think about it that this isn't just maybe, you know, a couple of kids...
No.
You know, that are trying to, you know, get some extra money. These are highly organized, coordinated activities that they were all, the article also mentioned that, gangs out of Oakland and the East Bay are specifically come over to the peninsula and target high value neighborhoods, commercial districts, tourist areas, you know, because they know it's easy and it's a quick score. So.
Right.
We got to go to a commercial break, but right before we do, let's just talk about a couple of defensive tactics that could be used to combat this. You already mentioned the obvious ones. One, don't leave anything valuable in the car to begin with. But if you're going to, don't leave it visible in the car. maybe consider locking your doors, or as people in San Francisco do, if you have nothing valuable in the car, consider leaving your windows down. I mean, that is something that people in the city do. When they don't have anything in the car, they leave the windows down so they don't get broken. Yeah, I know. That's how bad it's getting. What the police did in Fremont and San Jose is they used video surveillance of known break-in spots. So maybe we need some cameras at Montero State Beach, Cowell Ranch State Beach, Tinnitus Road. Who knows? All right, time for a commercial break. Give us a call, Coastsiders, 560-9851. Has your car been broken into? Have you seen glass in a parking lot and wondered what happened? Have you lost something? Give us a call, 560-9851. We're waiting to talk to you. All right, we'll be right back.
We've all heard the term coffee break. What comes to mind when you hear that phrase? Grabbing a quick cup and rushing back to the business of work or life? No, you want to take a granola's break. Enjoy the best coffee, tea, or hot chocolate on the coast. And you'll take your granola's break in a living room environment. Comfy sofas and chairs, just the place for a visit with friends. If you want a bite to eat, they have amazing baked goods, including breakfast sandwiches and the only coffee house featuring a large assortment of gluten-free baked goods. Granola's Coffee House is located on Highway 1, next to BK Motors. Check them out online. GranolasCoffeeHouse.com.
Put on your lobster bibs for a traditional New England-style lobster feed. Backed by popular demand, the American Board for Child Diabetics, also known as ABCD, invites you to our third annual lobster feed fundraiser on March 24th at the IDES Hall in Half Moon Bay. What could be better than enjoying a great meal and having fun while supporting the work of ABCD, helping make a difference in the life of a child managing type 1 diabetes? The lobster feed includes lobster, shrimp, sausage, corn on the cob, artichokes, potatoes, and let's not forget the bread and butter. Lots of butter. Enjoy the music from the amazingly talented MC and DJ brought to you by Denon and Doyle Entertainment. The silent auction and raffles will blow your mind. This year, it includes a 1-carat diamond, custom Harley-Davidson longboard signed by Mick Fleetwood of Fleetwood Mac. See it now hanging at Nano's Yogurt Shack on Main Street in Half Moon Bay. Buy your tickets now. They're going fast. At abcdiabetics.org. That's abcdiabetics.org.
And we're back, Coastsiders. This is Ruben Truthmaker here with the other dude on Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. All right.
Hello.
Let me paint this picture for you. You're 8 to 14 years old. You don't drive, and you're too old for playgrounds. Your parents tell you to do something outside, no more screen time. But the creeks are polluted. Your favorite vacant lot with the dirt jumps you and your friends built is now a 2-story house with a fenced yard. And the basketball courts at El Granada Elementary don't even have nets. What do you do?
What do you do?
Yeah. What do you do? You're 8 to 14.
That's a good question.
Exactly. That pause right there is exactly the issue. You know, on the coast side, we have trails.
Yep.
We have the beach.
Yep.
We have trails.
Yep.
We have the beach.
We have a few parks.
We have some parks. We have a few playgrounds. But, yeah. You know, if you're 8 to 14, okay, a trail, sure, but unless you can ride your bike on it, and even then, you know, it's of limited interest to you.
Right.
A playground, kids these days, they're timed out of a playground by age 5. You know, so a playground is not really of interest to an 8 to 14 year old.
True.
In the mid-coast, we have the unofficial quarter pipe there in the Burnham Strip. So we've got that. But there's really not much for the teens and preteens and tweens to do. So, in November of 2013, the ratepayers of the Granada Service District, the GSD, approved Measure G, giving the GSD Parks and Recreation Authority in their district, with the idea that they would develop both facilities and programming for parks and recreation for the Midcoast, for the GCSD rate district. So that measure passed, and in 2014, the GCSD formed their Parks Activity Committee, which has since been working through a set of priorities on their way to their stated purpose of bringing parks and rec opportunities to the Midcoast. Sounds good, right? I mean, they got the Parks and Rec Authority. They're moving forward.
But?
Well, there's always a but, isn't there?
Yeah.
Oh, good morning, Livy. How are you doing this morning?
Hello. Glad to join you guys.
All right.
So as we mentioned, Livy was at a cultural performance this morning. How did that go?
It was fantastic. I learned a few things about the xylophone that I never knew before. And so it was good. It was good stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm really into the GCSD thing, but I just have... You got to follow up on this. What are the interesting things about the xylophone?
Well, it's very interesting, the different sticks with the cushions at the end that bring up different sounds to the different blocks of the xylophone. I also learned that fifth grade singers have a heck of a lot more talent than I have in my little pinky.
Wow.
It was pretty awesome.
Oh, and this was, where was this?
Or depressing, depending how you look at it.
I know, awesome. Let's go with awesome.
Because I have no skills. So I'm sorry, what was that?
Where was this at?
It was at Seacrest School. It was their spring performance.
Oh, great.
Nice.
Well,
yeah, it was really nice.
We missed you earlier today. You were out on assignment, but we were talking about the Half Moon Bay High School, The Little Mermaid, is their musical production this year.
Yep, looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think we're going to go as well.
And I walked into the Parks and Rec conversation, which I, too, am pretty passionate about. Go Rec Center.
Right.
Rah-rah.
So, yeah, Rec Center... Unfortunately, that is not on the list of priorities that the GCSD have. So that their Parks Activity Committee has accomplished a few things since 2014 when it was formed. They've inventoried GCSD properties, compiled a list of priorities that they want to work on, and surveyed the community as to what the community wants.
Do you mind if I yawn?
That's a good point.
It's a yawner, Ruben.
Now, critics... Back in 2013, critics of Measure G were saying this was just a real estate grab by the Granada Sanitary District, the GSD at the time, that they just wanted this Parks and Rec Authority so they could get additional property tax and buy property and take it basically out of development. Now, whether you think that's wrong or right, that's what critics were saying, and the fact that we are now 4 years, coming up on 5 years since the passage of this proposition, Prop G, and there's not a tangible
plan.
There's action. There's nothing tangible that people can point to and say, "Oh, there's a new structure. There's something to do right there. There's a ball wall. There's a spider net, climbing net. There's a basketball hoop." There's no actual development that has happened, but they have worked through those things I mentioned, the priorities, the survey, the inventory, and they came up with a list of priorities. Okay, so two of the major things were development / protection of the Burnham Strip. The Burnham Strip is that area in front of the post office, between the post office and the ocean, Surfers Beach, there in El Granada. It's kind of a dirt parking lot. It's got the quarter pipe. It's often used as a parking lot.
Yeah.
That's considered the Burnham Strip, and the GCSD wants to essentially beautify that area.
So, wait a second. So haven't I seen for sale signs on that strip for the last number of years? I haven't seen them actually recently, but there were for sale signs on that.
There are portions of the Burnham Strip that are still in private hands, like right next to Picasso School.
Yep.
Okay, but we're talking about the area specifically, the dirt parking area that's kind of between the post office and Surfers Beach.
Right.
So not the entire strip of land
between
Alhambra Avenue and Highway 1 all the way up to between the stoplights. Okay. Not that entire strip.
Just one section of
just
it.
Just a section is.
Did I hear you use the word beautification, though?
Beautification.
And that would be the dirt area that has the potholes that are 4 inches thick in it.
Yeah, they're talking about grading that out, maybe putting some natural grasses in there, some picnic benches, maybe a low split wood rail fence to kind of demarcate the zone there.
They better put something up because people have been driving into there and parking and doing whatever for a lot of years.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to put some kind of barriers.
Well, so that's one of the the priorities. Another priority that was a really interesting concept is they talked about developing the medians in El Granada. So El Granada, laid out by Daniel Burnham, has some very prominent medians in some of the wider streets. These medians have eucalyptus trees in them, yeah. And at either end of El Granada are some large circles, some
right.
circled medians.
Yeah.
So the Parks Committee for GCSD went and looked at those medians and kind of developed some ideas for installations that could go in those medians. That would include pitcher's mounds, basketball hoop, a bicycle pump track, like a par course that you might see in other parks where there might be some pull-up bars, spider climbing nets. Even one idea had a little amphitheater where there could be, you know, some performances and stuff. Just a small one with two or three rows of cement seating. And the Parks Committee was starting to move forward with this until County comes in out of nowhere. Now, County, who had heard that these ideas, that GCSD had these ideas for years and didn't say anything until GCSD came up with a plan and started to move forward to enact that plan to build out these medians. And all of a sudden, the county comes in and says, hey, you know what? You can't do that because the county doesn't even own those medians. So we can't give you the authority to do that. And GCSD said, oh, who owns the medians? County said, those are owned by the homeowners across the street. According to the county, this was the county's position, that the homeowners on either sides of these medians, that their property went not just to the middle of the street, which most people may or may not know, your property actually goes to the middle of the street that you're on, that it extended across the street and into the middle of the median.
Wow.
So now logic would dictate then that the homeowner should then be able to go over, and if they wanted to do something to that their section of the median,
right.
they should. But no, that's not the case. So somehow it's in this legal gray area, and that just completely stopped all work on this median project while GCSD and the county went round and round about who owns these medians and blah, blah, blah. Well, a new agreement has been reached. Between the county and GCSD, they're now able to go forward with the medians.
What happened to the homeowners? They just got bumped right out of the picture again,
yes.
Just like always.
Somehow, yeah, they just lost some real property there, I guess.
It's yours, but no, you can't do anything with it. And we're
Did they
do
even know it was theirs?
No. They weren't advocating. They didn't know. I'm not exactly sure what the motivation was on the county side, but here's my guess, being the cynic that I am. I'm guessing liability insurance had something to do with it, that the county just didn't want anybody doing anything in those medians while they might be on the hook for something until they worked out a legal agreement. So
okay.
A legal agreement has been reached.
All right.
Now, the two priorities that GCSD Parks Committee had identified really flesh out kind of a conflict that GCSD has within itself when it comes to parks and rec, and that is the conflict between active recreation, which would include things where you're actually doing stuff. So
the things you just named.
Yeah. Basketball court, yep. Pitching mound, spider climbing net,
right.
Versus passive recreation, which would be benches, little footpaths that meander through the medians, which wouldn't be a bad idea.
No.
You know, those medians could be, and beautification of the medians with flowers and things like that. So
will we be getting rid of some of those eucalyptus trees?
Well, that's one thing they're going to have to do before they start development. They're going to have an arborist report and decide which trees are healthy, which trees need to go immediately, and then which trees could be eliminated to better provide more room for whatever installation they want to put there. But this this conflict between active and passive recreation is really kind of comes to the heart of the idea that we don't have anything for young people. Because
but if you, so yeah, I totally get it, and we do need to do things for young people, but why does that stop them from putting in some paths and some benches where people who like to walk or just get outside once in a while, how does that stop them from doing that? Why can't it be dual use?
Well, because they have a limited amount of resources, right? A limited amount of resources and a limited amount of scope or focus that they can put on this. And so, you know, you've got these two factions, the active recreation faction advocating that, you know, we already have trails and benches. Okay, so more trails and benches, good, but we already have those. What we don't have is active recreation facilities. And so if we're going to do anything, we should probably look at the things that we don't have and get some of those rather than more of what we already have. And so that's where a bit of the they can't do both all the time moving forward, and they kind of want to prioritize. And so there's a little bit of a conflict between this active and passive recreation. All right. And speaking of active, we are actively going to go to commercial here because we are just blowing through this show right now. Callers, Coastsiders, get in on this. Are you active or are you passive in terms of your recreational preferences? Give us a call, 560-9851. Let's hear from you, Coastsiders. This is your show. This is a way for you to participate in your community. We'll be right back after these commercials on Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast on KHMB Community Radio.
This is Joe Brennan and Nancy Margulis. We are members of the Half Moon Bay chapter of the Independent Order of Odd Fellows. We are dedicated to improving and elevating our community by embodying the principles of friendship, love, and truth. Every month, we have a number of activities open to the public. We'd like to give you a lineup for the events for the month of March, and I will have Nancy read the calendar to you. Nancy?
Thanks, Joe. On Saturday, March 10th, from 7:30 to 10, ballroom dancing lessons featuring the waltz and East Coast Swing. Tuesday, March 13th, speaker series features Gifford Pinchot III, the founder and president of a green MBA program, author of Entrepreneuring. On March 17th, the Skyline Jazz Band. On Tuesday, March 20th at 7 p.m., Photographer's Night. Friday, March 23rd, the Women's Clothing Swap. Please take a look at our website to get more details on all of our events. That's hmb-ioof.org.
The City of Half Moon Bay has scheduled 3 listening sessions in March. These listening sessions are an opportunity for members of our community to share their local priorities with City Council members. The sessions are March 10th, 11th, and 15th. City Council members want to hear directly from the people who live and work here to gain a broad range of community input on what people feel are the critical priorities the city should be focusing on. Session 1 will be held Saturday, March 10th from 10 a.m. till noon at the Ted Adcock Community Center, 535 Kelly Avenue. Session 2 will be Sunday, March the 11th, 10 a.m. till noon at the Emergency Operations Center, 537 Kelly Avenue. And Session 3 will be held on March 15th, 5 to 7 p.m. at the Kenyatta Cove Community Center. Get more information on these listening sessions by visiting hmbcity.com/listen or by calling 726-8272.
Okay, and we're back. Ruben Truthmaker here with the other dude and Libby Streetwise. Now, Libby, I see a vein throbbing in your temple right there.
I'm about to blow a gasket here, okay. Ruben. I am totally pissed. I tried to remain silent when you were talking about all of the facts that you had researched very studiously.
On GCSD here?
On GCSD, yes. But I'm over the politicization, how everything is being politicized to get this stuff done for these kids. We have thousands of kids on the coast that need to go to a place after school that is clean, good, fun. We need a large pool. We need a skate park. We need a pump track. We need basketball courts. We even need a lounge, you know, just some place where kids can go. And the Boys and Girls Club is great, but not cutting it. It's only so big. Again, no pool. We need additional fields. I mean, to only have Cunha as our go-to fields, I mean, that is a whole set of different problems that we have, because now we're being farmed over the hill when all of those fields are taken, because we can't play at Hatch or Cunha because they're potholes 2 inches thick or deep. And I'm over it. I'm tired of these excuses. We could go round and round, and I swear to God, we will be 100 years old by the time we see momentum in this.
Maybe we need some protests.
Yeah, I mean, okay, let's morph these two topics together. So, yes, I mean, there's a lot of frustration on the Mid-Coast about the lack of recreational facilities, especially, like, north of Frenchman's Creek. you know, whether the fields are available or not on a busy Saturday in the summer, trying to battle and get down to Smith Field or even the Cunha Fields, it'd be so much nicer if we could go north to Monterra or Moss Beach for the
mid-coast. It's just a nightmare. And honestly, traffic isn't going to get any better either. No. I mean, then we get into that whole conversation. So I won't. I'm just going to sit here with my 5 shots of tequila and listen to what you have to say next.
You mean 4 now.
Correct. Correct. Thank you.
And the other dude looks like his hand sneaking over there. Okay. So take that energy. And let's go to why? Protests, marches, and rallies.
Oh, right. I'm ready.
Now, I get where they have been effective in the past. I mean, a protest march that is just a classic that really was instrumental in moving the ball forward and is just a seminal point in American history was the march from Montgomery to Selma. Right, in the civil rights.
There were lots of marches.
Yeah, but that one across the bridge was really, you know, that is very iconic in terms of marches that we remember. And there's been, as you said, there's been many others. But those seem in the past. Can you name me a march recently that is one of those kind of iconic marches?
Well, I'm not going to say it was a march, but the young people from Florida have started some sort of a movement, and some of it was by protesting and speaking up when people said, and they're still saying it, people are saying, they're kids, we aren't going to listen to kids, are we going to let them run the world? Well, maybe we should.
And the Women's March.
And the Women's March was
the
very...
The Trump inauguration.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my issue, being a closet radical, I guess, is when these marches and rallies are planned weeks or even months ahead of time, with specific dates, places, and start and stop times, are they still an effective means of dissent and protest? They feel very staged, very segmented, very very closed off, very one-off. And it just doesn't seem like the establishment is really going to be pressured by these protests and dissents when they know that it will only happen at a certain time, and then at 3 o'clock when the rally's over, everybody goes home to their houses, and there's no occupation. Remember the Occupy movement of a few years ago? I told my wife at the time, this is going nowhere. And she said, oh no, this is going to be a lasting thing. It lasted the summer until it started to get a little cold, and then the party broke up, and Occupy is no more. So we've had the women's marches and the Me Too movement, and now with the student shootings. I need to see some lasting effects of this. I need to see that this is not just a moment in time, and I feel that these scheduled protests and rallies are just not effective anymore.
I have to disagree.
Okay.
I have to disagree with you. I really think that, to your defense, I think that in this day and age, we are looking for the immediate satisfaction of seeing results. And it takes years. It takes years for it to happen. I mean, the civil rights movement is a perfect example of that. There weren't immediate changes right away, but gradual changes.
Well, this is the difference I'm seeing. To me, yeah, some of those were scheduled, but to me there was a more, and I would say that what's happening with the high school students now feels more like that than anything
organic
that I've felt recently. An organic bubbling up of just, you know what, this cannot stand. We have had it. The Occupy movement didn't feel that way to me. It felt manufactured.
Part of the reason that things seem manufactured now, and yeah. You can, if you want to put on your conspiracy hat, you can say that the powers that be have made it this way so that they can control the masses more easily. They have to be more careful. There's legal problems with everything nowadays, and if you get 500 or 1,000 or 10,000 people walking down the street and nobody knew about it, then there's no police protection. There's no way to try to keep things orderly and neat as opposed to, and even now when they have these scheduled things, sometimes cars end up getting turned over and burned and all kinds of stuff. They've done this, they've homogenized things so that they can control the legal fallout from all this stuff.
And there you've nailed it right there. The homogenization of it, though, has taken away, in my opinion, some of the impact of it.
It has.
So we can, I guess, agree to disagree on that, and that's what this show is about, really. That's what this show is about. Coastsiders, if you have a thought, get in right now, 560-9851. We want to hear your thoughts on this. I did some research on protests. According to two researchers from Massachusetts who have launched the site Count Love to track protests and, quote, turn that protest activity into something that could be used to make a larger point, they found that from January 2017 to October 2017, there were 4,296 protests with over 5,402,011 attendees. I love how specific that is, the 11, you know, the extra 11. Let's make sure we get those 11 in there. They also found there were 425 total marches involving 4,124,543 people. So recently we've seen the women's marches, marches against the travel ban, Charlottesville, and now the school shootings. And one of the reasons why we wanted to talk about this topic, we talked about what activism on the coast side looks like in our January 26th show.
Right.
But I wanted to have us talk about this because students at Half Moon Bay are now planning to join other high school students around the country in walkouts this month and next. On March 14th, there's a one-month anniversary walkout for the Parkland, Florida shooting. On March 17th, there's something called the March for Our Lives, which I believe is also being driven by high school students. And April 20th is, I believe, the 20-year anniversary of Columbine.
Right.
So students at Half Moon Bay High School are working with the administration there to coordinate the walkouts. So, okay, you got to admire the activism of these students, right, and the fact that they're willing to walk out. But again, to me, part of protest, part of dissent is you are saying, I'm not going to follow the rules because the rules are not right. But when you're working with the administration to schedule and make sure it's okay to walk out, what have you really put on the line?
Well, can I throw something at you that I heard yesterday from a friend?
Absolutely.
You're going to love this. I don't know that we even have enough time. He said that he heard on the radio that Harvard University is going to give extra credit to students should they walk out. Okay, what do you have to say about that one, Ruben?
Nothing wrong with that, is there?
We have 2 minutes.
Again, when you have establishment sanctioning of protests, the protests have been, in my opinion, co-opted. They're being controlled by the establishment.
But at the same time, you're saying that Harvard University can't protest in their own way as well by supporting their students? Because you're the man doesn't necessarily have to mean that you're out to get everybody. There are a few people who want to try to help. It's the same way with these companies. And some people go, it's tiny. That doesn't matter to them. They've cut off the NRA from whatever little perks they were giving to them. Are those corporations, are they bad guys?
Well, I don't have an answer to that. Let me back up to the Harvard question. When you give credit to students for protesting, then you're creating an incentive to protest for the grade, not to protest for the organic reason. What is it that you're, that should be the reason that you're out there, that you're so passionate, that you're so fed up, that you're willing to go out there on a cold March morning and walk around screaming at the top of your lungs about what you feel is wrong. And you might have some repercussions at your job or your school, but you're willing to take that because you are committed to whatever your cause is. And when it's scheduled and when you've gotten the okay from everybody and it starts at 9 and it ends at 10:30 and we're going to do these 3 blocks and then we're going to disperse and go back to our, you know, our comfortable lives, there's not the pressure that's needed. That's my feeling, but I'm glad we have the dissenting views here in the booth. So, Coastsiders, let's hear from you next week, okay? We've had a lot of topics here. I know I've talked to many Coastsiders. They have a lot of feelings about car break-ins, passive active recreation, and protests, especially involving our high school students. Give us a call next week. Put this number in your speed dial right now, 560-9851. We'll be here next week and the week after and the week after and the week after. So this is Coastal Windage. Ruben Truthmaker here with the other dude and Livy Streetwise every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on KHMB Community Radio, 1710 a.m., 100.9 FM, and streaming live on KHMBRadio.com.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Take care.